getting you home. This is 105 Drive with Julian Clover.
And back now to one of those stories we were hearing about in the headlines, and that's the Fairness Review. It's being put together by the Cambridge Commons, which promotes social justice and the reduction of inequality. I've got two of the people behind the report with me now. Stuart Weir is a former editor of The New Statesman. He went on to found Charter 88. And also Deborah Padfield, who's with the Citizens Advice Bureau. Welcome to you both.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for coming in. Why did you set out to write the report in the first instance?
Well, we're an affiliate of a thing called the Equality Trust, which is all about kind of get equality. And we were talking to them, and they said some people were doing a fairness review. So we thought, well, we really should do one in Cambridge, because we were very aware of how... Well, we thought we were aware of how bad things are, but actually... We were incredibly shocked by some of the things we discovered.
So there's similar reports being produced in other parts of the UK at the moment as well.
Yes, there's one in Islington, there's one going to be one in Swindon and other places, yes. Mm.
So tell us about the findings. And I guess it's all apparent to everyone, no matter where they come from, that there is sort of a difference in life in Cambridge, which goes beyond the whole town and gown thing. On the one side, there's people who are doing quite nicely for themselves. On the other hand, there are people who are worse off. But your report seems to suggest that they're not just worse off, they are considerably worse off.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as you say, there are some... I mean, there's one hedge fund proprietor in Cambridge who made £70 million in last year, whereas some people we've identified are living on... around about 10,000 a year in the lowest, among the lowest incomes. And we just think it's important that everybody in Cambridge understands what's going on, because the more awareness of what's going wrong, and the more chance there is of changing things.
There's not necessarily a correlation between rich people being in the city and also the poor, or is there?
Well, we think there is. We think inequality breeds poverty at one end and ridiculous affluence at the other end.
Mm. And is it the people at the higher end of the scale, they just don't realise, if you like, what's going on around them?
I think that's true, yes. I mean, we have an extraordinary sort of phalanx, really, of very rich professional and managerial people, around about 70% of the population in Cambridge. And then there's a huge gulf, and bang, you're down at the bottom. There's no intermediate...
Is this the issue? There's sort of like there's no middle ground, if you like. There's just a, you know, you've got the high end. Obviously, there are people on middle incomes, but also this sort of great big space, if you like, between the top and bottom as far as incomes are concerned.
And it's also geographical, because in the south you get rich people, in the north and the east you get pockets of real deprivation in some of the wards there.
I guess that, I don't know, Deborah, I know your work with the Citizens Advice Bureau, some of that's been in London. I used to live in London myself, and, you know, so one knows that it's effectively like anywhere else. It's a mixture of areas where, I guess, you know, you could say there's poor people in the east and richer people in the west. It's a bit of a sweeping statement, but we kind of get these differences everywhere. Is Cambridge, if you like, becoming a sort of reflection of London?
I think there are similarities between London and Cambridge too, and the obvious one, of course, is housing. Just the enormous gulf between income and cost of housing, whether you're buying or whether you're renting. Certainly amongst those who are renting, you know, a very high proportion, their income, however hard they work, is not sufficient, so they are forced to be dependent on housing benefit, which itself doesn't cover all the costs. So more and more people are having to move out of Cambridge cities.
But then, of course, they've got the travel costs of getting in, and we could start going into the infrastructure of that not necessarily being there either, I suppose.
Yes, I think for people on low, insecure incomes, it's often genuinely difficult to make work pay, you know, even with the benefit, and particularly, of course, once you take childcare also into account, it's and one of the big problems for people on the lower end wages is that it's not just low wages, it's also insecure work. It's also underemployment.
These so-called zero-hour contracts, is that part of the mix here as well?
It's part of the mix, yes, and 0 hours is one of a phalanx of insecure kinds of employment, yes.
And on the benefits side as well, because, again, there's so many ways one can slice and dice it. You've got the people who aren't working and they're living on benefits. And then, as you mentioned, you've got the people who are in work, but they need benefits to prop them up, and that's against the background of what you mentioned about the housing.
Yeah, I'd resist that kind of division between people who are in benefits and people who are in work. I think one of our central findings was that we do have low unemployment in Cambridge. What we have is high underemployment, high in and out of work. So people are flowing in and out of work, often on benefits. People in work are also needing benefits.
And I guess sometimes the benefits system can sort of not quite catch up because the people who are administrating it and the systems just can't move fast enough for somebody, absolutely, I don't know, who's working for a fortnight and then maybe absolutely out of work for 3 weeks, say.
Spot on.
Yeah. I think one of the things we would really like people to understand is that this idea that there are people in work and there are people in benefits, actually loads of people who are on low wages and in and out of work are also on benefits all the time. So the hard worker against the shirker rhetoric is so false and misleading for most people.
One does wonder sometimes if maybe some of the benefits, for example, housing benefits, an example here, insofar as a person who, for whatever reason, can't afford to pay all their rent, they're given housing benefit. As you suggest, it's not always enough. Yet at the same time, a lot of that housing benefit is going to a private landlord
who's doing
very nicely on it, thank you very much, and sort of that other end of the scale, which Stuart was mentioning earlier.
Mm. That is one of the built-in idiocies of the ways we subsidise housing in this country, that yes, just as working tax credit goes to subsidise low-paying employers, so housing benefit goes to subsidise landlords.
Are these problems which have built up, not necessarily just in Cambridge, but I guess, but obviously we're talking directly about Cambridge here, are these things which have built up over time, you know, successive governments of whatever colour have done this, and then they've done that, and all these things have compounded,
yes,
and there's this political thing where you daren't take a benefit away, because obviously that's going to harm some people, even though you might be trying to readjust the system for the greater good later on.
Yes, and the benefit system's grown up incrementally since Beveridge, and it's become more and more and more complicated. What we're having now, of course, is the attempt to simplify it with universal credit, which will still leave it formidably complicated, and actually will. For some people, it'll make life easier. For others, it will actually make life harder.
Mm.
And it's still going to be
and permanently harder, not just for some sort of readjustment period.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And one of the things is that the people who administer benefits, they themselves don't understand the system either. So they make loads of mistakes and so on, which, of course, rebound on the people who are on the benefits. So it is a total mess. Mm. And I think we're both very sceptical about the ability of universal credit actually to make the difference.
So what happens next? Is there something that government, be it at a national level or at a local level, you can do? We know that the city council are clearly aware of the parts of the city where there's the problem, but you know there's only a limit that they can do within their own powers and within their own budget to sort it out.
Yes, one of our findings was very much that city and county council are struggling hard against a backdrop of powers and money being stripped away in a very undemocratic way, and it's quite scary to see it. I'm always frustrated at discussion always focusing on benefits, if that's to the exclusion of the housing crisis, of the employment crisis. You know, we have an economy that depends heavily on these very low wage, very insecure jobs, and you can't put that right by a benefit system, even if it were generous.
No, I guess the housing debate, as at least there was some debate on it within the general election campaign, even if we didn't necessarily get a resolution.
Well, there's always debate. What we need is what we need is real action, and it is a crisis.
We need all the parties to actually recognise how acute the housing crisis is.
Do you think they do realise? Yeah. You know, they talk about it, obviously. Yeah, and
they talk about it only from the point of view of owner-occupation. They want to keep owner-occupation flying along. They're not worried about the increases in prices.
I think we've besotted a little bit too much with home ownership in this country.
Yes, and they're not worried about the fact that in Cambridge, loads of people buy flats as investments and don't even put people in them.
I know that John Vale at the Cambridge News, amongst others there, has been reporting on new houses in Cambridge, which I think there's a report either today or yesterday, which has said, I think, you know, 30 houses of one particular development had gone to international investors.
He's an excellent journalist, John Vale. I think that report was very important. He does dig around. He's a proper journalist. They're in short supply these days.
I make no comment on that one. That's a card-carrying NUJ member myself.
Yes, I think you're right about overemphasis on owner occupation to the exclusion of enough discussion about rental terms of rental that actually give people security of occupation. You know, people in the private sector particularly have very, very little security, and it's just a life of permanent insecurity, permanent anxiety. It's really grim.
I suppose one thing I'd like to mention is that the large number of people who are being refused social care that they need in Cambridgeshire, we don't blame Cambridgeshire County Council that their money is being stripped off to the bone, but it does mean that thousands of people are not getting social care at all who would be qualified for it normally.
And this sort of thing is, I don't know, if like a nurse pops in every day to make sure you're all right, that sort of thing?
Yeah,
or?
And it's so important because social care is the way in which the NHS can be set free to care for people in hospitals and so on. But if social care system is clogged up, it clogs up the whole system of care and health in our country.
Yes, we did find that fewer people are actually being found eligible for adult social care, even though needs are rising and expenditure on individuals is going up, but to fewer people, which sort of suggests that people are kind of slipping out of the system.
Yeah, something needs a bit of rebalancing. Yeah. We could talk for a whole while longer, but we're out of time here. I just quickly say the report is available if somebody wants to download it online, I believe.
It is, yes, as a PDF, and if people go onto the website, the Cambridge Commons .org, we will send them a copy of the full report.
Or they can download it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you both very much for coming in and speaking to us. That's Stuart Weir and Deborah Padfield, who put this report together on the Cambridge Commons. We are late for travel. It's 14 minutes now away from 6.